and hopefully we'll have a recording starting now. I will not put those cables under my shirt right now because that takes time. Okay, starting next week, we start with the introduction to Python and Pandas. I would only recommend to take part in those exercises if you do not have experience with those things. Beyond that, every exercise is recommended to everybody, having experience or having no experience. Basically, the schedule from there on is we have a lecture, and then we have some exercises based on that lecture topic. One very special thing is in here, because we have a holiday on Wednesday, the 1st of May, where we can't give an exercise. Therefore, group 3 and 4 start 1 week later than the other exercises, because we want everybody to be taught everything. And therefore, we decided to start 1 week later with the second exercise sheet for group 3 and 4, so the Wednesday exercises, while group 1 and 2 start directly in week 3 of the lecture period, so in calendar week 18. If you have questions on that, just post them into the forum and I will explain. And you also see the submissions are late in the semester, so you have already been able to familiarize with Python, with anything required for those submissions. Okay, where? I hope everybody's registered on Studon, because where our lecture slides are posted, where our exercise sheets are posted, where we will post the submissions, where we will post everything relevant for the exam. And we also inform you about any deviations from the schedule within that student group. If you have questions, there is a student forum in the student group where you can ask questions. I will not answer to mails, because my experience is that I get the same question 100 times via mail. I get the same question one time through the forum, because everybody can read the answers I've given there. So if you have a question regarding KDD, please use the student forum. There you will get an answer within 1 or 2 weekdays, most often within 1 weekday. We also have a GitHub, a public GitHub with all the lecture slides, all the exercises, and in the future also all of the submissions without solutions, of course. There are no solutions for submissions publicly visible in the GitHub. Why is that relevant? There might be some errors on the slides. There might be some errors on the practice sheets, on the exercise sheets. And if you have experience with GitHub, we would be very happy if you simply correct the errors and ask for a pull request, because it's faster than writing us a big forum entry for just a typo, and you will also get a contribution marker on the repository and things like that, and it's just faster. If you do not have experience, there's no worries, just post a forum entry. We are happy for every bug report, I would say. We are in our third iteration of this lecture / exercise, so hopefully there aren't that many errors anymore, but there might be still errors. With ConsMod, our, I think, 15-year-old module, we still found errors in the last semester, and it has been 15 years of checking those slides. That's something that will happen. Nobody's error-free. The same is true for recording, I would say. If I say something wrong during those exercises, those lectures, and it's recorded, of course, you will see those recordings, but if I find this error, I will correct it in the forum and will tell you about what was wrong in my talk and will correct it this way, just so you know. Maybe I should mention it as well as the recording now started, hopefully. I don't get any signal. Yeah, it started. This recording will not be available through the official FAU video site, but through the FSI, because the FSI Informatik offered us to record those lectures, and they have their own video portal, which I will link in the student course. So no worries about that, but don't be confused that it's not the official video portal by FAU, but a separate video portal. That's because the FSI was generous enough to record our lecture. Okay, any other questions about the organizational stuff? And you're always free to ask questions. Just raise your hand and ask questions. Yeah? We have ways of ensuring that if a task is too easy to be, okay, I should repeat the question maybe. The question was in the submissions, you said exercises, but I guess you mean the submissions. How do we check for duplicates maybe if the task is very easy and there are not many ways of doing those things? Of course, we are aware of easy tasks being done in a simple way. But we can drag that over many tasks. And if you have 20 tasks that are 100% identical, there's a huge chance that both are duplicates. Of course, we will avoid false positives. We have methods to do that. I will not inform you about every method, of course, because security by obscurity is a thing as well. But we will ensure that there are no false positives through that, because we wouldn't want you to waste your time on doing something the honest way and then getting punished for doing everything the right way. That's something we'll ensure. Any other questions? Yeah? The question was whether the exercises will be recorded. No, the exercises won't be recorded, as the essential part of exercises is to work on an exercise sheet together. And there will be phases of giving you 10 minutes time to work on an exercise sheet, and then we will work on the exercise solution together by your ideas. To record those exercise sessions wouldn't make any sense, because then we couldn't work on exercise sheets together. There will be a sample solution published, of course, of every exercise sheet. There will be a sample solution within the Studon forum, a Studon group. However, there will not be any recordings of that, as those recordings would just be the sample solution or another solution created by the group. But I really recommend you to be part of exercises and be present yourself and actively and participate actively yourself. Just sitting in there and looking a movie while the others are doing the exercises isn't helping you at all. And we now have some experience on grades, and there is a huge correlation between persons that are active in the exercises. Mostly we know who is active in the exercises because they always raise their hands. And those most often get 1.0, 1.3, things like that as grades. And persons that are only present but aren't participating often are in the worst quantile on that. So actively participate. Of course, there are no, I've seen you, there are no grades for participating. We will not grade that. There are too many people to do that. But just participating gives you the experience you need in the exam to pass. Yeah. In most cases, that is possible, yeah. I can't tell you whether any group is very full right now. Our process is that as long as the lecture hall is free, so as long as there are free places in the exercise hall or the lecture hall, we are fine with people being from other exercises. We won't check it. But as soon as the lecture hall becomes too full, so not enough seats for everybody, we will check and we will remove everybody that isn't in the lecture exercise group because of fairness. We can't just decide you are part of the exercise group, but you can't, visited the exercise 2 minutes late, so you have to leave. In that case, everybody who is registered to the exercise has the preferred stance. Did I repeat the question? For the for everybody, I do not remember. Okay, the question was whether you can switch exercises one time, two times, if necessary, due to specific events. And yes, that is possible as long as there's room in the exercises. I can't promise it to you right now, but by experience, after 1 or 2 weeks, the exercises become less visited, so there will be some space. Because even with me really recommending participating in the exercises, I know that some of you won't. That's the reality, and I know that. But it's on yourself if your exam fails. That's on your side. Any other questions? Yeah. Sorry? Yeah, so the question was whether you are allowed to submit the submissions alone. Yeah, the only limit is that it can be at most 3 persons. So everybody's really participating. Otherwise, you would have a 50-person team where 1 person's active and the others would just say, yeah, it's my submission as well. That's something we do not want to. That's why we decided to have a limit with 3 people. I think that's a reasonable limit because 3 people can interact with each other, but there's no limit at the lower end. As long as there's 1 person, you can do it yourself. Okay, other questions? Okay, I think that's all. So we can switch slides. I've already talked a lot about what our module is about, organizational advice. However, I didn't talk about knowledge discovery in databases yet. Knowledge discovery in databases is a weird name for something. What is knowledge discovery in databases in your eyes? Any ideas? What's the simplest way of rephrasing knowledge discovery in databases? Yeah? Data visualization. Or big data visualization. I'm not sure whether the big was part of your answer or not. Visualization of huge data amounts is surely part of knowledge discovering databases. But that's only a part of that. Any other ideas?
Data mining.
Data mining. What is data mining?
Trying to find insight from the big data. Quite similar to what you see.
So you've
trying to find the insight.
Insights, yeah. You try to find insights in huge amounts of data, big data. Yeah, that's a good explanation, yeah?
Here. Finding useful information or some patterns.
Yeah, finding useful information and patterns. That's also a very good explanation. We have something you also call the data mining. Basically, knowledge discovery in databases is data mining. We will talk about that at a later slide in detail, whether we have 100% match between data mining and knowledge discovery in databases or not. But basically, you explained it. First, let us talk about we need something like knowledge discovery in databases and data mining. Well, all of you talked about big data. Big data is a buzzword, I would say, which is used very heavily in our days. Basically, we have a huge amount of data. We have that many data that we have terabytes and petabytes and hexabytes of data accumulating in databases, accumulating in data warehouses, accumulating in any way possible. For example, we have database systems. We have also the World Wide Web. The World Wide Web is a huge amount of data, especially if you include videos like YouTube, like Vimeo, like Amazon Prime Video, Netflix, all those things. Huge amounts of data. We are all using some electronic device, and I would say everybody in this room uses at least one piece of electronic device that generates data. Might it even be only logs? Just logging what you are doing on that device, just logging the errors occurring on that device. Those data isn't useful to us because we just have zeros and ones. But there's some value in those data sets. And for example, businesses might want to use the data they have to gain insights on their customers, gain insights on their processes, gain insight on everything. The science, we at FEU are no exception to that. We use big amounts of data to gain insight on how things work. The society, news, for example, social media always uses data to gain more insight on things. That's why today is sometimes called the era of big data, because we are now able to generate, to collect, and also to analyze huge amounts of data. And that's the initial situation. We have a huge amount of data, but we want to get to know something out of that data. And that's where we use knowledge discovery in databases / data mining to gain that knowledge using the huge amounts of data. Let's take a look at science. Before 1600, science was mostly empirical science. So just doing things, taking a look at things, maybe throwing a block of ferrum into water and seeing how much water is displaced. displaced. That's empirical science. We gain knowledge through that. We gain knowledge on how things work by just doing experiments, just taking a look at things. After 1600, until the first half of the 20th century, we had the theoretical science, we had maths, just computing possible outcomes, simulating possible outcomes, doing theoretical experiments. Of course, we still had empirical science, but theoretical science was a supplement to that. After that, we had the computational science, because we first had computers. In the 1950s or 1960s, we of course had very small computers that are doing things. Very big computers that are doing very little things. Things we can do right now on a pregnancy test. But we could simulate things automatically for the first time. And now we have data science, the next step in that process, where we have a flood of data and want to gain knowledge by mining those data sets. And data mining is the most current challenge in science. Maybe a little supplement to that as well, because we are knowledge recover in databases. One part of that is databases. So one essential part is that we base our data science on databases. Just for you, information, of course, databases had an evolution as well. Databases aren't just databases. We have many different kinds of databases. We started with simple network database management systems. Then the relational model occurred, the thing SQL is based on, or SQL databases are based on. Both came up in the 1970s and became a product in 1980s. And in the 1990s, we first had more specific databases. For example, databases for multimedia. We couldn't just save strings or integers or floats or things like that. We could save also videos, photos, and things like that. Or we had map databases. Or, very important, we had data warehouses. Data warehouses will become a part of lecture 4, if I remember correctly. OLAP. That's a specific lecture about data warehouses. And since the 2000s, we also had stream data management systems. Systems that do not save data, but compute data while it's flowing through the system. So you generate a temperature value with a sensor. This temperature value is sent to a data stream management system, and where the average is computed, and then it's sent to the next part of the system. So you do not have that more, you do not generate a huge, even huge amount of data. And that's where we will do our data science on, because we are the data management chair and we are mostly researching on databases. Of course, there are other ways. I will talk about that later on. Okay, now we come to that part we already discussed in some detail. What is data mining? Most of you have been pretty close to the definition of knowledge discovery in databases, because I think you already said that we want to extract patterns from huge amounts of data. And basically, that's what knowledge discovery in databases is. However, we do not want to extract any pattern from there. We want to extract interesting patterns. What are interesting patterns? Interesting patterns are first non-trivial. What is a trivial data set? Any ideas on that? A trivial pattern, yeah? Repeating? Repeating data is somehow trivial, yeah? The second time you see that pattern, or the third time, or the fifth time, it might become trivial because you already know that, yeah? Any other ideas what might be trivial? Yeah? Sorry?
Like product numbers or IDs correlating with dates.
Okay, so for, you said product numbers or product names, identifiers, I would call it, correlating with dates. So for example, if the name of a product is iPhone 27, then you know that the iPhone is released in 27. Yeah, that's trivial as well. And things that we all know are trivial. For example, if you mine a lot of pictures of trees and get to know that they are brown and green most of the time, that's pretty trivial. Something we all know that most trees are green, have green leaves. Not all, of course, but that's something trivial. Something implicit. Your example would have been very implicit because the date is part of the identifier. That's something we do not want. We want previously unknown patterns because if we already know a pattern, why should we mine for that? If we already found out that customers like to buy soda, why should we mine for the most bought product? There's no sense behind that. And we also want potentially useful data. Potentially useful is especially special because it might depend on the context. For a student, a potentially useful information is what might become part of an exam. If you mine the last past exams and get patterns through that, that's a potentially useful information for you. For me, that information isn't that useful because I know that, because I already know that. And for the gardener outside there, it's even less useful because he doesn't even participate in KDD. That's something you have to have always in mind. Potential useful is always context specific. And the other two things are also context specific. Something might be trivial for you, but might not be trivial for a child of age 5, of course. Data mining and knowledge discovery, mining and knowledge discovery in databases, or knowledge mining in databases, are mostly synonyms. However, there's small detail in that, because in databases is part of KDD. Data mining is not always done based on databases. Knowledge discovery in databases is, of course, done with databases in mind. That's the most obvious difference between those two. Besides that, they are synonyms. You can use them together. Also similar words, and you might need them if you look at something up in Google Scholar or things like that. You might also see knowledge extraction, data analysis, pattern analysis, data harvesting, data archaeology, data dredging, information harvesting, business intelligence. Depending on your context, it might named differently. Those fields might have small differences to our field, but they have a huge overlap to our field. So if you ever see an article about business intelligence, you know that is most likely linked to data science / KDD. Business intelligence, for example, is mostly used in a business context. So the information, international information system students in here might have heard that word in their lectures. But is everything data mining? No, it isn't. Of course, if we are discovering trivial patterns, that is not data mining, because we want to have interesting patterns, non-trivial patterns. And therefore, for example, searching for females in a customer database, or males, or whatever, isn't data science, because you discover something pretty, trivial, something you know. If you search for a distribution of customers to different genders, of course, that might become non-trivial. But searching for customers with a specific gender, simply searching for that, is a non-trivial process and therefore not part of data mining. Also, joining two databases, and I hope most of you know what a join is. If you do not know, you might have to look basics on database systems up, because that's something we will not explain here. That's part of ConsMod, the mandatory requisite thing we already talked about in the prologue. But joining is joining together two databases, basically. How it's done is something you can look up at home. That's also pretty trivial. You gain no new knowledge. Or you only gain simple new knowledge. However, for example, analyzing payment history for fraud detection, that's definitely data science, data mining. Or let's do an infection behavior for better understanding of a pandemic. This slide was created during a very specific pandemic, is, of course, data science. Are there any questions on what data mining is right now? Because, of course, we will talk about that a lot during the lecture. I don't think so. Okay, let's take a look at different views of different communities at data mining. Because, I've already told you, knowledge discovery in databases, of course, is a very specific view of a database community on data mining. There are views, for example, by the business people. There are views by whatever. And all these views might vary in a little detail. Our view, the view of a database systems community, is very heavily based on the source of data. We start with a database in mind. This database contains data. This data is then integrated into a data warehouse. A data warehouse is a very task-specific collection of data. Within that data warehouse, we then select the task-relevant data. The task-relevant data is then used to do the real data mining step. And then we get to the visualization, and we have knowledge discovery as a result. That's our view on the data. You see, the first three parts of that are all very data-specific, very source-specific. where is the data from? Which is a very database systems community-like view on data. The business community does have a different view on that. They have a pyramid. In the bottom, we have the sources of data, so which we have in the database systems community down here. We might have databases, but we might also have files. We might have paper documents. We might have any kind of data as a source. This data then has to be pre-processed slash integrated. Because if we have, for example, paper documents and a database system together, we can't simply say, yeah, that's our source of data. Simply put them together into a file and then we can start. No, we have to integrate those data. We have to merge, for example, our invoices with the databases to merge the customers, for example. That's a pre-processing step. We have to integrate those data. That's often done via data warehouses. Again, lecture 4 is about that. After that, we gain first knowledge about the data. We do some simple statistics on that. We do some querying on that data. We try to get easy insights in the data, some very high-level insights in the data. That might not be regarded data mining yet, because too trivial, but are still useful to gain, to get to know the data. After that, we try data mining. So we try to gain interesting patterns. We try to gain knowledge. And after that, we have a presentation. So we are doing a visualization because business people do not want to see a stack of tabular data. We want to see graphics. They want to see visualizations showing what we have. And then we do a decision, which is very business specific because we have people that make decisions as a job. That's very specific. The pyramid shape is basically showing you that at the bottom we have a huge amount of data, and we have less and less and less and less and less data. We always pick less and less and less, so we have a very specific information at the top to do with, to perform a decision. We do not want to give our bosses 30 terabytes of data and say, yeah, read that. That's not what we want in the business community. We want to use always or to reduce the data we are working with every step from bottom to top. And of course, always we have the higher we are in the pyramid, the higher is our potential to support decisions. I guess those two views are very different in some way because they have a different focus. However, the process itself is pretty similar. We start with data, we gain knowledge on the data, and we have some gained knowledge after that. The same is true for the machine learning and statistics community. The data scientists around here might have that for you. That's also really similar, but also with a specific focus. They start with a data input. It's not important whether it's a database system, it's not important whether it's a data warehouse. We simply have a data input. Then we again do data pre-processing. We select the data we want, we merge the data, we join the data as we want, and we pre-process the data. There will be a separate lecture around preprocessing, so no worries about that. Then we do our data mining step. So there we do our pattern discovery. And after that, we do some post-processing. I think that's the simplest view on data mining we will talk about, because it's simply pre-processing, mining, post-processing. Nothing to worry about. Again, it has a focus on what is most important for this community, because this community focuses on those three steps. And we have, again, that focus. However, there is, of course, a cross-industry standard for that, something everybody was fine with, to go with. That's CRISP-DM, the cross-industry standard process for data mining. That's an in-detail model trying to merge all those different views on data mining into one. I have to admit that I think that this CRISP-DM approach is very business heavy, again. But business is what makes money, so I guess that's why they decided to do that. We start with understanding our business, understanding our objectives. It might be something we want to know. What are buying customers most often? Might be a problem we didn't answer yet and want to answer. After that, we take a look at our data, our available data. What data do we have within our data warehouse? We collect the data we have, we verify the data, we try to describe what the data is about. So we are prepared for the next step, the data preparation step, where we use that huge amount of data to select the data that is most likely to contain the information we want to gain. For example, if we want to know what products are bought most often, we maybe might disregard our data ordering to our suppliers, because why is that important for customers liking products? Okay, that's not really true, because of course I will order things most often that are bought most often, but let's say those aren't linked. We select the data we want, we clean data, and we join the data, we integrate the data, and so on. That's basically the pre-processing step of the business community. Then we model a technique. Models are most often known through deep learning. GPT-4 is a specific GPT model, for example. This can be done with traditional methods, as we talk about in this lecture as well. There might be a specific classification model. What that model is in specific, we will talk about later on. And we have to select a model, a technique we want to use to solve our problem. Then we build the model. Let's use the neural network context as well again. We train the model on our data, and then we evaluate. Did that model we built fulfill our goals we set in step one? If yes, we can go to the last step. If we are not satisfied, we have to go back to the drawing board and begin the whole loop again. If yes, of course, we can use that model. That's called deployment in here, but you can use that model without deploying it on a server, things like that. Deployment is about using the model in a real context, gaining the insight. Okay, those are four different ways of having a view on data mining. Of course, there are many more, but taking a look at your eyes, you are very satisfied with four. If I would talk about more, I guess everybody would sleep right now, so let's stay with that. Something I want to mention, in most exams, one of these views might become relevant. Just a little tip. Okay, as we already said, there are a lot of communities having a view on data mining. But why is that? Why do that many communities have their own view on data mining? I was wrong, sorry. That's not the slide I expected. Okay, let's go back. We have data mining. And data mining itself can be described in different views. We already talked about we have to take a look at the available data. And that's a very specific thing we have to look for in data mining. Because if data is not available, we can't use the data. Our data mining project is always limited by the data we have. And that's why we collect that many data today, because we say, collect everything, and then we decide what is of use and what is not of use. That's possible because storage is very cheap right now. In early days, there are 100 KB of data was pretty expensive. We couldn't do that, of course. Right now, we can buy a 20 terabyte HDD for, let's say, $300. That's no problem. We can save a lot of data. However, it might become not available, the data we need. For example, if we are in a medicine field, some data might not be available because it's forbidden to save due to data protection laws. We have to decide what patterns we want to search for because we can't search for everything. There are a lot of methods leading to different patterns, frequent patterns, classes, clusters, outliers. All of these are patterns, specific patterns. And we have to decide which pattern is interesting for us, or might become interesting for us. And based on that, we can select the technologies we want to use. Because if we are looking for frequent patterns, we can't use a clustering method. That wouldn't make any sense. We have to use a frequent pattern analysis method. Otherwise, we will not have any chance to find the pattern we are looking for. And of course, we want to have some knowledge about the application. I guess that's pretty obvious. What kind of data can be mined? I already answered that. What kind of data can be mined in data mining? Any ideas? Yeah?
Tabular data.
Tabular data, that's knowledge discovery in databases. Of course, if we limit it to databases specifically, then we can only save relational data. In this case, we are talking about data mining, so the general thing. Okay, you have a very deep learning specific view on data. You say everything that can be converted into ones and zeros can be used. Yeah, you can extract patterns. What can be converted into ones and zeros?
Just like images.
Images is very specific, but we can't only mine images. Of course, we can mine images. There's no problem with that. But what can be
structured data.
Structural data, yeah. Also, can be transformed. Images can be transformed. Yeah. Basically, all data can be transformed into ones and zeros. We might have to select a sample period. If it's continuous data, of course, if you have a temperature value that changes in milliseconds, that changes in nanoseconds, that changes continuously, we of course can't record that data continuously because that would make endless data. But using sample periods, we can basically use anything. And that's the answer for data mining. We can use anything as long as it's useful for our target application. Of course, again, we wouldn't want to use a data set that isn't containing any information about what we want to find out. I think that's pretty obvious, but we can use anything. We can use relational databases. And in my opinion, relational databases are the best thing because they are structured. Relational databases have to be structured in some way. There are methods like entity attribute value that loosens that structuring a little bit. We are talking about EAV later in the semester. But they contain a structure. Data warehouses, transactional databases, but also a lot more of data. We can use graphs, we can use social networks, we can use text databases, we can use multimedia databases, so images, for example. We can use the World Wide Web. And everybody who has visited the internet these days knows that there's a lot of different stuff in there. So basically anything can be mined. We just have to select the right method to mine that. What kind of patterns can be mined? That hugely depends on what method we are using and our data set. With a classification method, we will not find frequent patterns. With a data set regarding trees, we won't find genders of people. That's not working. One important thing is that patterns aren't useful all the time. But basically, we already talked about that because we are looking for interesting patterns. And I guess that's contained within that definition that a pattern doesn't have to be interesting. Let's talk about methods. We will talk about all of these methods in detail during the lecture. But let's give an overview over the lecture. First, we will talk about generalization, which is basically a method of data integration, where we clean data, transform data, integrate data, and maybe also use a multidimensional modeling approach. What that is will become clear in the course of the semester. So don't worry about anything you do not know yet. Data cube technology is something very specific to OLAP, which we will take a look at in lecture 4. The next method we will take a look at is association and correlation analysis. So We want to know whether two different data columns, for example, are correlating with each other. For example, students visiting the exercise and students having good grades in the exam. Are those two things correlating with each other? So is a person visiting the exercises and participating often having good grades in the exam? Answer, yes. So that's basically a correlation analysis. We also use that to do a frequent pattern analysis. I already mentioned multiple times. Because maybe persons buying an iPhone often also buy a case for an iPhone. Why shouldn't they? Persons buying an Android phone might not buy iPhone cases. That's also a correlation. And that's basically what a frequent pattern is. We will have association rules within those frequent patterns, or based on these frequent patterns, where we have things like persons buying beer might, with 50% probability, also buy diapers. That's something we will do in the frequent pattern analysis lecture. Because we have to know methods to find those frequent patterns efficiently. The next method is something I also already mentioned, classification. We want to find classes of things. We already know classification is a supervised method to find classes based on existing classes. Let's say we have pictures. Let's go to pictures, images of things. And we want to classify those pictures into cars and no cars. Then we will have a training data set with some pictures of cars and some pictures of non-cars. And based on these pictures, we will train a model that can predict with a certainty whether a new picture is containing a car or isn't containing a car. That's classification. A similar approach is clustering, where we do not have a training data set with classes. We simply put in a lot of data, let's say again pictures, and those pictures are grouped together in clusters, similar pictures. Those might correlate with classes. So it might happen that you put in a lot of pictures of cars and a lot of pictures of non-cars, and cluster analysis will cluster the cars together and cluster the non-cars together. However, it's non-supervised, so there is no helper, and there's no specific truth to that given to the method beforehand. There's a huge problem with clustering because clustering is always based on similarity of two objects. And similarity is a weird, name. What is similarity? Are you similar to your seat neighbor? Depends on definition. Maybe you write similar grades. Are you similar as a person? By writing similar grades? I don't know. Maybe you come from the same country. Are you similar only by coming from the same country? I think a lot of Indians might be here in that room. India is a big country. Not everybody from coming from India is the same, similar to each other. That's something we will discuss in the context of clustering. What is similarity? Next thing we will talk about is outliers. We always will have data, not always, but most often will have data that doesn't match the rest of the data. It's very odd in the case of the data. There are different types of outliers, which I won't talk about right now. That's the last lecture we are talking about that. But depending on the type of outlier, the methods to detect those outliers might differ. Let's just give an example. There might be a general outlier, an outlier that, for example, if one person would sit in front here, he or she would be a very general outlier because most of you aren't part of the first three rows. But, for example, one person is sitting in between a huge cluster of persons in here. He is a contextual outlier because in the little group of people in there, he is sitting alone. That's a contextual outlier. Nothing to worry about, just an example, maybe a bad example, but still, that's what outliers are about. Detect those types of outliers. Depending on whether data has a time and or an ordering, the timestamp is a type of ordering, we might be able to do different things with those data. Because if we know a sensor, a temperature sensor, is recording every 1 second, we can, of course, detect other patterns when a data set where every data is put into one pot and then mined together. Depending on the structure, we might have different kinds of patterns we might be able to detect. We always have to find out whether the mined knowledge is interesting. Keep that in mind. That's the third time I'm talking about that. Not all data is interesting. We always have to evaluate. And you might remember the CRISP-DM evaluation is a huge step in that. Okay, what technologies are used, and that's the slide I was introducing earlier on. Why do we have different views on data mining? That's basically why. Because data mining isn't just one discipline. We do not only have us database people doing data mining. We also have the statistics people helping with data mining. We have the high performance computing people helping with data mining. Training a neural network depends on huge clusters of GPUs. Those guys are helping. We need the machine learning community. We need the algorithms community. We need the visualization community. And of course, every community helping with data mining has their own views on data mining by themselves. And that's good. But the really important part of that slide is to know that data mining isn't just one community. Data mining are a lot of communities helping with that. Why is that the case? Because we have a huge amount of data which can't be handled alone. We need the high performance people. We need the statistics people to maybe pre-process the data, pre-select the data. We need a lot of different people. There's high dimensionality of data, so a lot of different dimensions might be part of that data. What are dimensions? We will talk about in the next lecture. We have a huge complexity of data depending on the data set we are using. If we use a relational database, it might be less complex. But data streams, sensor data, are often very complex because it has to be processed just in time. See, I try to speed up because we do not have that many time left and that much time left. But yeah, we have a huge amount of challenges with our data. Okay, next thing, what kind of applications are targeted? That's the same question. That question can be answered the same way as we answered the source of data. We can target any application where data is present and can be used to gain insights we want for that application. Pretty simple, I guess. Again, no specific application is targeted by data mining itself. Of course, there are good examples. Web search engines are a good example to mine data. They want to find patterns to show you cars if you search for cars in Google Images. That's a thing of data mining. We might want to have fraud detection on our credit card. So if anybody is using our credit card without our knowledge, our bank can inform us about that. We might have machines that want to use predictive maintenance. So we know whether a machine might become defect before the defect really occurs. And we can use a little off time at the machine to repair the machine before it becomes defect. There are a lot of applications of data mining. I just looked for a little, for some projects at FAU. You can do that yourself at chris.fau.de. And I think also .eu. There are a lot of different projects of different chairs doing data science at FU in a practical context because it's relevant for most fields of research. Of course, that's not something I would ask in an exam just to ensure you do not have to know projects with data mining. And you do not also have to know dates of empirical science and things like that. Of course, that's, I think, pretty obvious that that's something I won't ask for. Some major issues, and that's the last slide we will talk about, and then we are finished. Some major issues in data mining. We have a lot of different methods. We have a lot of different data sets. We have a lot of things to handle. And those things we will talk about in the next lectures. That's just a repetition, so I will jump to the summary. We already talked about data mining. What is data mining? We talked about database technology, how it became able to assist with data mining. We talked about the KDD pipelines or views of different communities on KDD. We also talked about mining being very various. We have different variety of data. We have different applications we can do that for. And we also gave a brief overview over methods. However, those methods will be discussed in more detail in the upcoming lectures. Okay, and with that, we are finished.